It's 10:15 in New York, and this is Martha Dean, and good morning, everybody. As you know, if you've been listening to WOR all night and this morning, I hope, the guest on the Martha Dean program this morning is Dr. Bernard E. Donovan, the superintendent of New York City Schools, and I thank you for coming, sir. I know you're busy this morning.
It's nice to be here.
Dr. Donovan, I'll give you a chance to finish your coffee and read a little something I picked off a ticker and brought in here, if you want to. And I'll do a little work for some sponsors, and then we won't be interrupted. All right?
Fine.
First of all, let's turn to the front page of the New York Times. And when you do that every morning, you really know what's going on. All the news, and it's colorful, clear, complete, local, national, and international. Do read the Times every morning. It's so much more interesting, and your conversation will be, too. There's a complete report, of course, of Vice President Humphrey's speech last night, and it's the Times has printed the entire text, and it might be a good idea to read it so that in your thinking you won't be thinking out of context. And then there are several stories about New York City schools, and Dr. Donovan and I will turn to some of those a little bit later. A P.S. It costs very little extra to have the Times delivered to your house or your apartment. If you'll telephone the Times at Murray Hill 70700, they'll arrange for home delivery quickly and easily and at very little extra cost per month. If you live out of New York, send a postcard to the Times, Times Square Station, New York, New York, and again, home delivery will be arranged completely to your satisfaction. And now I want to do a few items on the shopping list before we get back to our guest. First, we have Stouffer's Foods back on the Martha Dean program, and I'm glad about that. They do very fine frozen dishes that you buy in the frozen food department at your favorite store and take home and just cook, and that's that. Stouffer's Frozen Macaroni and Beef. If you like macaroni dishes, I think you'll be very pleased with this. They have not tried to save money by cutting down on this and that. They could save a little by using hamburger instead of aged beef, or they use ordinary macaroni or substitute tomato paste for whole juicy tomatoes. But Stouffer's doesn't do any of that, and that's what makes Stouffer's Frozen Macaroni and Beef taste so good. And I think you'll be very pleased with Stouffer's frozen macaroni and beef. And then we have Markel plastic wrap, and I don't need to tell you how to use clear plastic wrap. You know, you put it around leftovers, you put it over various things in the refrigerator, you wrap this and that in it, including your shoes if you're traveling and you can't find the shoe bag. Markel crystal clear plastic wrap, and it's a very good one in that it clings to itself and doesn't get all wrapped around your hands and arms, and it's easy to take apart and remove from the bowl or whatever. Markel clear plastic wrap, and also Markel fluff out facial tissues. They make very good products, the Markel people. The clear plastic wrap, the paper towels, the paper napkins, and the fluff out facial tissues. And now just one more thing, and this is about Mountain Valley Water from Hot Springs, Arkansas. Seven of New York's top restaurants serve nothing else. And what is it? Well, it's just delicious table water from way down there under the rocks at Hot Springs, Arkansas. Nothing has been added. Nothing has been subtracted. It's just delicious. And a good many of you drink it for health reasons, and I know that. But a great many of us drink it just because it tastes better. So look for Mountain Valley Water from Hot Springs, Arkansas, at your favorite store, and take home a few bottles. Now, this is the Martha Dean Program, WOR New York, and our guest this morning is Dr. Bernard E. Donovan, who, as everybody knows, is the superintendent of the New York City Schools. Dr. Donovan, I didn't really intend to start this way, but since there's some news on the experimental school at the Ocean Hill, Brownsville, could I just start with that, please? We have a report by telephone from a man who's over there, and also some news on the ticker, that most, it's a rather ambiguous word, but most of the teachers have walked out, and Rhody McCoy has said that it's possible that the experiment is going down the drain.
Well, I just came from there this minute. I've been out there since 7:30 this morning, and it is true that some teachers have walked out of 271.
Half or three-quarters?
Well, I'd say a majority of the teachers have walked out. These are the teachers who were employed by Mr. McCoy earlier this year, and they have walked out in what appears to be a protest against our reinstatement of other teachers in that school.
The 10?
That's correct. All 10 don't go into 271, but the 10 in the district and some of them in 271. The teachers we have assigned have remained there. The area has been exceptionally quiet. I must tell you that the people of Ocean Hill, Brownsville have been very good in this situation. There have really been no incidents. We have a problem in some of these schools, and we're on top of it. I have 10 men in that school on my own staff. A member of the board is there. We have impartial observers from the mayor's office and from the union. There are members of the Ocean Hill community in there also. We're all watching and helping and working together to accomplish a very difficult task in a very quiet manner.
Dr. Donovan, is this true? I understand that the reason that the teachers gave for walking out is that they simply can't operate, they can't teach with all the observers you just mentioned there, plus police outside and so on, that that the atmosphere is all wrong for teaching, and that's the reason they gave.
This may be partially so, but it is our business as the Board of Education, and the mayor has indicated it's his business, to see that proper process is maintained and the teachers are permitted to teach. And we have done that for the protection of the teachers and the children involved. We are taking every case in the school that provides some difficulty, and we are trying to resolve it on the spot, so that if there is any difficulty in any of our observers being there, those observers will be removed when we find the difficulty has been allayed and has been changed. Our observers are there to help. They're not there to interfere.
When you say help, how do they? How does an observer help a teacher teach a class in fourth grade arithmetic?
They don't help a teacher teach a class. We assume the teacher's licensed to do that. We expect him to do that himself. But, for example, when the principal of the school assigns two teachers to one room, one of whom has been there since September, and the other one is a reinstated teacher, there is the possibility of friction between these teachers. And our observers talk to them, try to calm the situation, try to explain how the children can only learn if there's not friction in the room, try to get reassignments of teachers to avoid that kind of thing. In other words, to assist the management of that school to overcome these hurdles, which are very definite and very clear and very present.
Now, Dr. Donovan, this morning those 10 teachers are back there, and in each class, in, let's say, the 10 classrooms, and there are 10 other teachers, so 20 teachers are handling 10. You have two teachers in
each
room.
Well, the 10 teachers are not all in one school. The 10 teachers went back to 8 different schools.
No, I know.
And some of them are in classes with other teachers, and some are not. Some are in their own classes. It varies according to the principal's assignments.
Well, when one is in a classroom with one of the other teachers who's been sent back, how does it work out? Who teaches what?
What happens is that each of the teachers takes a group of the children and teaches them independently. In other words, you split the class, and each one teaches independently. We've been doing this all over the city in the past year, you know, in the first and second grades, two teachers in a room. It can be done. I must admit that at the moment it is causing some friction. But the union has said that as long as we are on top of this and are doing our best to see the conditions are right, they're standing by. They're not taking any other action. And the governing board, I understand, is meeting with members of our board's committee now. And when I'm through here, I'm going back to join that meeting. We are anxious to get this resolved calmly. The Ocean Hill, Brownsville community has a right to good instruction. It has a right to participate in its schools and see that the children get good instruction. Our teachers have a right to security in their positions and a right to be free of harassment. Now, it is those two principles we're trying to work out together. It requires a lot of calm, a lot of sensitivity in the people working with it, and that we intend to pursue.
I also wanted to ask you, Dr. Donovan, you've already taken the subject to children. Nobody seems to talk about them very much these days. We talk about the union, the board, the governing board.
Unfortunately, they're a pawn in an adult struggle.
But how does it, you've been over there and you've observed, how does it work out with little ones who, children always know what's going on. They know when their father and mother have had a fight the night before, even though it isn't brought up at the breakfast table.
I think it leaves
how does this friction affect them?
I think it leaves them confused. Frankly, I think it's unfortunate for the children in that area. But on the other hand, this is a problem that has to be resolved in an equitable way. We hope it will be shortly. We're at it every day, and we hope it goes back to normal and the children get back to their regular instructional program. It is unfortunate for the children.
But Dr. Donovan, how can it go? It's not clear to me how it can go back to normal, because the local, the Board of Education ordered the 10 teachers back into the district.
That's right.
And the local board has ordered McCoy not to take back the 10.
That's correct.
So there they are.
Well, if I knew the solution, I wouldn't be here today, and we wouldn't have the problem. The solution is a long and hard one, but is a solution that in Ocean Hill is only a sample of what the solution must be for the whole city. And therefore, we have to work long and hard and patiently to try to arrive at a solution that nobody sees at the moment.
Nobody?
Nobody that I know of.
You know, I had a report, an eyewitness report, from a very good reporter, an old friend, Tom Costigan, this morning, who was up at 201 yesterday, and where 95% of the teachers are 95% of the students are black, and 65% of the teachers are white. And he was there a good deal yesterday, and he said and that's the school that everybody knows had so much controversy over busing.
That's right.
And that everything was running very smoothly.
That's right.
Peaceful and quiet.
Well,
so why doesn't it work? Why is it so difficult in Ocean Hill, Brownsville, when it's not in some of the others?
I think what has become difficult in Ocean Hill, Brownsville, is that the governing board has taken so determined a stand to have powers that neither the Board of Education nor the state law can give them, that we're at a very hard situation. I think white teachers and black teachers are equally capable of teaching children of any color. I don't think that should enter this issue, although it has entered it. It should not enter it. What should be determined is the competence of a teacher to teach freely. And that's what's being struggled out here in this area.
And then somebody always says, well, at the root of the problem at Ocean Hill, Brownsville, is the fact that the 10 teachers, the controversial 10, I don't know what else to say, were transferred in a manner that caused this. They received registered letters before the end of the school term, and I never know what to say. Why were they told before the end of the term?
Well, I can't answer you that because I didn't do the telling. Mr. McCoy would have to answer that. But I think that the effort was a kind of dramatic one to remove from that area some teachers that the community felt it did not feel were doing effective instruction. But we have procedures for doing that. Teachers who are not effective can be removed, but there is a process for it. They have rights, they have human rights, the same as the children of the area or anybody else in the area. And all we're asking is that everybody's rights, children and teachers alike, be preserved.
And then somebody says all the time, has it been a power struggle? Is that what this is all about?
Well, I guess everything in life today is a power struggle, so this doesn't be any different that way.
This seems worse because children pay a price for a power struggle.
It seems worse, and I guess maybe it is worse because that power struggle in a small local area expanded itself to the entire city and prevented over 1 million children from going to school for 2 weeks, which is most unfortunate. These matters should be possible, a resolution by intelligent men and women sitting down around the table and talking out their differences rather than by disturbing the instruction of a whole city.
Dr. Donovan, you've already said that, unfortunately, this controversy has had racial overtones, and we don't really know. I couldn't really understand why. It's why I brought up 201, where there haven't been any. But it's true, apparently, that white teachers feel that black-run districts will persecute or evict them. The teachers are apprehensive about this.
Well, there is that feeling. I don't believe it is legitimate, except that there are some extreme militants who do intimidate people. I think they're in a vast minority. I think the majority and practically all of the parents of this city want their children taught well, and not asking whether they be white or black or Puerto Rican or anything else. They want good teachers in their schools. Now, we need black teachers in our schools because the black children of our city need an image of success and relationship. But they also need to have white teachers, because if we're going to live together in this city, we have to begin to live together in school. If we don't live together there, we might as well stop altogether.
Well, Albert Shanker said here yesterday that this subject is an extension of of housing, of a lot of other things that society hasn't integrated. They always expect the schools to do everything.
That's right. We have to carry the burden for everything that doesn't go right elsewhere.
It's like the mother who doesn't teach her daughter to sew, but she thinks the school should do it.
Yes, that's a part of it.
It is part of it, isn't
well,
it?
Well, I think the school has a very great obligation. I don't think we can solve the whole problem, and I think that housing and social welfare and everything else must come into it. But after all, we do reach all the children. And if we reach all the children, we do have probably a heavier responsibility than anybody else. And so far, neither in this city nor in all the great cities of the country have we come to a real effective approach to this problem. But I'm going to tell you, we're working on it every minute.
I know, day and night, all of you.
That's right, and day and night recently particularly.
I know. Dr. Donovan, but I wanted to give you a chance to kind of talk about the experiment and how it's working out, because I understand that some of the new teachers have rather impressive qualifications.
Well, all of the teachers in that school have taken an examination from our Board of Examiners and are licensed to teach. I don't doubt that among the individuals there are some that have greater qualifications than others. That's true of any staff of teachers. I think that district should be permitted to experiment with new ideas, new techniques, new approaches to children. Trouble is, it's hard to experiment in the middle of a crisis of this nature. And that's why I wish that we could come to agreement that we'd all calm down and simmer down and let some of the educational experiments go ahead. There are experiments up in 201. There are some down in Two Bridges. There are experiments in other districts of this city that are not demonstration districts. And some of them are very good. But what we need to do is calmly approach the more active participation of parents in the work of the schools. It's desirable. It's needed. Only it should be done calmly and orderly.
Well, you've had a great deal of parent participation at Ocean Hill Brownsville.
Oh, yes, we've had a lot of participation, but whether the participation has improved the instructional program is something we haven't evaluated yet.
Have you talked to the parent groups over there about this?
Well, we've had parents' associations in to talk to us, and there are mixed feelings about it, but I think that it would be hard for us to say that the Ocean Hill experiment had either succeeded or failed when it has never really had an opportunity to get off the ground in an effective manner.
Dr. Donovan, Albert Schenker said yesterday that the teachers, those 10 teachers, were transferred for political reasons. But just what the political reasons were are not very clear to me.
Well, I don't know what political reasons are. I don't quite see what that meaning is. All I know is that the method of transfer was not a proper one, and that started the whole business.
This was the thing I brought up a minute ago, registered letters before
the
term was over.
That's correct. That's not the procedures we use, and that got the teachers upset, plus some people kind of intimidating them a little bit. And well, you know how these things roll up, and you get a big snowball going, and that's what we have.
Do you think all of this will retard the progress of decentralization of the schools?
I hope it doesn't. I hope that good, effective decentralization proceeds. I don't doubt but what it's had an effect on it, yes, of course. I think there are people who feel, well, if this kind of chaos is going to exist whenever we have decentralization, maybe we shouldn't have it. But I think reasoning people will say that when you try something new, you'll always find a bit of excess here and there, and that should not deter you from what is right.
And you feel decentralization is right.
I feel decentralization is a good thing for this city. And there are many plans being worked out by our board to present to the legislature which will give good, effective, reasonable decentralization.
Well, your reasons for thinking that must be obviously that you think it'll give children better education.
Yes, I think it'll do it for just one particular reason. In one big system, I think the parents feel themselves so far away from the head man and so far away from the controlling forces that they don't feel part of the school system. And if we had smaller units to which parents and community people could refer for decisions, for policy making, I think they'd feel better about it and feel they were participating and would understand their schools better. And that parental understanding and participation creates an atmosphere in which teachers can teach better. That's the way I see decentralization.
Do you see it as money always comes up when you mention schools? Do you see it as being more costly or less?
Oh, I think it'll be more costly whenever you duplicate services in many districts instead of in one. It's more costly. But even if it's more costly, if it is effective, it's worth it, because we never spend enough on education any place in this country. And I'm not just talking about the city of New York, which has been good to education, but I'm talking about all over. And it will be more costly, but that's something we have to work at.
And will it be more unwieldy?
It can be administratively unwieldy, or it can be administratively smooth, according to how we work this matter out. That's what we're doing the next few months here before we go to the legislature again, trying to iron out what we call the bugs so that we don't have an unwieldy system. Anything in the city of New York is so large as to be almost natively unwieldy.
Dr. Donovan, the pairing of schools was an experiment. This comes under the head of the experiments the Board of Education is trying to do, wouldn't you say?
Yes.
Whatever happened to all that?
Pairings are still in force. We've had them evaluated. The evaluations indicate that they did succeed in doing some good things for the children involved, but the good things they did were not that good that we should go on an entire expanded program of paired schools. First place, even if the results were good, the pairing of schools is a geographic problem. In a big city like this, there are certain schools can be paired and others that are too far away to be paired. So it creates an administrative problem right there.
Do you want to say anything else on the report on this, on the experiment? All we've talked about are the things that haven't worked out with the experimental schools. And you want to talk a bit about what has worked out well?
Well, I think what has worked out well in some of the experimental schools has been the increased parent participation, has been a new awareness on the part of teachers of communities' desires for their own children, has been an increased dialogue between parents and teachers, which I think is extremely valuable in handling children, and some new ideas for bringing other services to children, health services, library services, social welfare, things that we have done in the school system, but
which we may well do better and do more of.
Now, of course, these experimental centers are only a year old. You can't expect to remake the world overnight. But I'm looking forward to increased participation by the teachers and parents in the program together. And I'm looking forward to progress in this city, not in terms of who controls what, but in terms of what are we doing better for children. The rest of it is just form. The children are the substance.
Dr. Donovan, you have said that the majority of the teachers have walked out of the Ocean Hill-Brownsville school. Now, right now, they're
only out of 271. The other schools, they have not.
They're out now of 271, right?
They were when I left. I'm not sure what they are. It changes every 5 minutes.
If they stay out, does this mean we'll have another school strike?
No. If they stay out, they stay out. The other teachers are in and will conduct classes for whatever children are there, and if the teachers stay out, we will replace them with others.
You don't think it'll that the whole city will walk out again?
No, I do not.
How long do you think the police and the observers will have to stay there?
I couldn't answer that. They're going to stay there until we feel there's no need for them. They're there for the protection of the children. They're there for the protection of teachers. They're there merely to ensure an orderly process. They are not around the building. They're outside the building. There are a few of them inside, but separate from the children, just available. And we intend to eventually remove them as soon as we see things are quiet. We would like to have a school free of both observers and police if we could do it.
Dr. Donovan, have you you know the 10 teachers who were transferred?
I don't know them personally.
Have you had any kind of first-hand reports about what they say about this, why they think they were
transferred? No, I have not asked the 10 teachers directly. I'm not even sure all 10 are back there at the moment. We're checking to find out how many of them are back today. I have talked with the union, and we have given each of these teachers their program. We did that Saturday morning before they went back. And each one of the teachers seemed reasonably accepted. That is, the program was reasonably acceptable and made no complaint about it. One or two cases were not so good, and we amended that. We changed that program. But I do not know their personal reactions at this point. I have been pretty busy with the general problem.
Yes, because you're the chief executive officer of the Board of Education, and you have a seat on the board, but you don't vote.
That's right.
Dr. Donovan, you suggested a brief orientation course for teachers returning to Ocean Hill-Brownsville.
No, I
didn't
suggest
you?
That. No. I asked Mr. McCoy what he was going to do with the teachers when they return. And he said, I think that since we've been in operation 2 weeks, when these teachers return, I'd like to have a brief orientation because we're using some new methods and some new techniques, and I'd like them to learn about that before they go back into the classrooms. It was not my suggestion. It was Mr. McCoy's.
I understand the union objected.
Well, the union objected because I think they felt that normally you don't take teachers and give them a 2-week orientation after school has started. But I didn't enter that picture except to report that to the union, that was all.
I want to ask you perhaps to talk a bit about where you draw the line between decentralization and complete community control. How do you do it, and where would you draw it? Before that, I have a little more work to do for a couple of sponsors, if that's all right with you.
Sure.
We have a new sponsor, Pope, and Pope tomato paste. It's made of 100% imported plum tomatoes, and that's important because imported plum tomatoes are very firm and very little water in them, and as a result you have a tomato paste that's very thick and very rich. The plum tomatoes Pope imports make the big difference between ordinary and superb Italian style cooking, and a good many good cooks say this. Pope tomato paste has been the symbol of quality for over 40 years. It's not a new product, and so when you shop for tomato paste, why don't you try Pope's, and I think you'll be very pleased with what it does for any recipe that calls for tomato paste. Pope, P-O-P-E, Pope tomato paste. And then we have Klein and Beshar's for rug cleaning, and if you live in Manhattan, Bronx, Queens, Westchester, or nearby New Jersey, call Beshar's, Plaza 81400. In Brooklyn, Queens, Nassau, Staten Island, New Jersey, call Klein's, Klein's with a C, Ulster 70900. That's Beshar's, Plaza 81400, Klein's with a C, Ulster 70900. And they do really good rug cleaning. Right now they'll clean any 9x12 standard domestic rug for $12.95. If you have wall-to-wall carpeting, they'll come in and do that, and they'll give you an estimate beforehand, of course. Then we have Blackberry Julep. If you like vermouth, I think you might like Blackberry Julep, which is vermouth with the added rich flavor of blackberry juice. And it's produced and bottled in Italy and imported to the United States by Jack Poust and Company. And a good many people like it as an aperitif, and a good many people like it over fruit desserts. If you've sliced nice fresh pineapple and nice fresh oranges, try pouring a little Blackberry Julep over it before you leave for about an hour before you serve. Blackberry Julep. And if you like vermouth, I think you might like to try this product, Blackberry or Cherry Julep. Made in Italy and bottled in Italy and imported to this country by Jack Poust and Company. Then we have Renew It, and a good many people use this now in their houses instead of paint. Well, to be accurate, over about 100,000 homeowners have already switched to Renew It. Comes in 14 good colors. It fuses with any surface, wood, cement, stucco, shingle, or brick. You don't put it on yourself. Men come and spray it on after they've caulked the windows and doors and reset the leaders and gutters at no extra cost and have masked the windows. Renew It is sprayed on the house, and it's fireproof, and it's guaranteed against peeling and chipping and cracking. And if you'd like to have a demonstration, call them up at AX70188 and ask some of the men to come out and see you, and they will. There's no obligation. If you'd prefer to have a booklet and a price list, send a postcard to me, Martha Dean, WR, New York 18, and on it write Renew It. Renew It. And now we get back to our guest, and our guest this morning on the Martha Dean program is Dr. Bernard E. Donovan, who is the superintendent of New York's city schools. When I interrupted Dr. Donovan, I thought you might want to talk a bit about the line between decentralization and complete community control. I have a lot of mail on this, and people are concerned about it. Where do you draw the line, and what happens?
Well, Board of Education and I are very much concerned about it, too, and I think the approach to decentralization is one that says, what are those things in the administration of school that can be best done at the local level? What decisions can be made? What policies can be set at the local level best? Those should be made there at the local level. There are other things that are best done at a citywide level, both economically and with good judgment, and those should be left at the city level. Now, the fine line between decentralization and community control is something that nobody has answered yet, and we're seeking the answer to that in our long-range plan for December the 15th of this year. That we're in the process of making at the moment.
So the plans aren't ready to be talked about yet?
Well, they're not ready yet because we haven't gelled it that far in our Board of Education at this point.
Dr. Dunham, they just sent a news release into me from the newsroom, and this is a report from a junior high school, 271, happened just a few minutes ago, shortly before 10:30 a.m. Shall I just read it?
Sure.
Scuffling broke out in front of junior high school 271 shortly before 10:30 a.m., and involved were police, students, and parents. Police barricades were pushed around and several eggs and bottles were thrown. At least three persons were arrested in front of the school this morning. They included two persons charged with carrying dangerous weapons and one for allegedly assaulting a police officer. Mm-hmm. So this happened after you left.
Well, I think we have to expect some incidents to happen of this nature, and all we are doing as a board and the mayor is doing as the mayor is to provide sufficient protection that this kind of incident is handled immediately.
But what a terrible situation to have little children trying to go to school under these conditions.
Well, there's no question about that, and the Board of Education is very much concerned about the children going to school, and we think these conditions should not exist, but they do. And we are trying to handle them in as firm and fair a way as possible.
But you still have this problem of the 10 teachers, or you ordered them back and the local...
They're back.
They're back.
They're back.
But they're not wanted, and the struggle will go on.
I'm afraid it will for a while until we come to some resolution of it, yes.
Dr. Donovan, you said you don't think there's a danger of a citywide walkout, but do you think there's a danger of a citywide walkout every time there's disagreement between the union and a local school board or superintendent?
I don't believe so. I believe that in this particular walkout, the union thought that the job security of teachers all over the city was threatened by this particular action. I don't approve of their walkout. I think strikes of this nature are illegal. There's no question about it, and they disrupt instruction in the schools. We have said so. And I don't believe that in the future we're going to have a citywide walkout every time some locality does something. However, that depends on the rules and regulations and the laws that we set up to govern decentralization. If those rules and regulations contain protection for the rights of individuals, both the pupils and the teachers, then there should be no argument and any grievance should be adjusted by a decision of the regular due process of law rather than by walking out. So I think it's our business and that of the legislature to set up the necessary and clear-cut regulations governing these affairs.
If you were king, a great dictator this morning, what would you do about the situation?
I think the queen would ask me to abdicate.
But there must be some way that you'd like to start to solve this.
Well, I would like to start to solve it by changing the minds of men, which is probably the most difficult way to do anything. But if the minds of men could be changed so that instead of bickering and fighting and pressuring, they could sit down and do what God made human beings for, which is reasonable activity, could sit around a table, I don't care how long, and discuss their differences and iron them out, that's the way I'd like to see it done. Now, I know that's being a little eternally optimistic, but I still believe it can be done. I believe that in such things as the United Nations with world affairs. I believe it in Congress. I believe it here with the Board of Education and people in this city. Somehow or other, we've got people who stir things up and feel the only way to work today is by power. That's a very unfortunate way for man to act. And I think it's the return to reason is the thing we need to get these things solved.
I'm glad you said that way, because after all, I think everybody knows that this is a kind of a power struggle right over that one school where the trouble is this morning, isn't it?
I'm afraid it is, yes. It's a focal point.
That's right. And we're not singling them out. They've singled themselves out.
Right.
But it is a power struggle among races and among unions and among various things. And yet when you and the at Gracie Mansion night four last, wasn't it? You stayed all night?
Yes, we sure did.
You stayed all night. The mayor stayed all night. Albert Shanker stayed all night. At that time, reasonable men were sitting around a table reasoning.
That's right. We should continue that kind of thing. But it is difficult to talk these days in reasonable ways while a number of people threaten and intimidate and try to use force. Now, the number is very, very small, but very, very loud. And I think that when we come to community control or decentralization, if the Board of Education is not to be telling the local district what to do, then other outsiders should not tell that district what to do either. If the district would be left to itself to talk with the board, we'd be much better off.
And the district is not left to itself to talk with the board now.
I'm afraid not.
You don't agree, I gather from what you said at the beginning of the program with Rhody McCoy, that all of this is, the whole thing is going down the drain.
I do not believe it's going down the drain. I think Mr. McCoy is pessimistic about it. I can understand his pessimism from his point of view, but I don't think it's going down the drain unless somebody chooses to put it down the drain, and we are not the ones who are choosing to do that.
You think somebody could choose to do it, and it would, though?
Well, if you keep it stirred up long enough, I suppose it will. It could go down the drain, but we would like it not to. We would like this demonstration project to succeed. We would like this governing board and the people of Ocean Hill-Brownsville to have a very, very intense and effective participation in their schools. We're prepared to do that. We want it done. But we have to come down to peaceful measures by which to do it.
And that doesn't include transferring 10 teachers the way it was done?
It does not include any method that is not one that is due process for everybody, the governing board, the teachers, the parents, and the pupils.
You see, Dr. Bernard Donovan, I hope I'm not being obtuse, but it's very difficult for people, for me and for listeners not involved in it, to understand why 10 teachers can't be transferred, why other teachers can't replace them. And those of us who work for a living find it very difficult to understand it.
I think to
maybe try you to, don't realize that because you're so close to it.
That could be. It could be. But you see, we have a number of matters in teaching that have to be explained. One is teachers have certain rights under a contract they have, and one of those rights is not to be transferred. And remember, this was transferred out of a district, not just from one school to another in the district, but transferred out of a district to where, I don't know. Because we also have a rule that a teacher will not be transferred into another district unless that district wants him. So if you transfer 19 out, where do they go if the next district doesn't want them in the city? That's part of our decentralization plan. So therefore, the transfer was tantamount to a dismissal. Even though it wasn't exactly.
Yes.
Well, this created the problem because we have procedures. They're orderly. They're for everybody's interest. They weren't followed. Now, I suppose the district out there was interested in effective teaching, and it perhaps felt that some of these teachers were not as effective as they should be. There are methods of getting around that. Good supervision, good principals help them. Good superintendents help them. And finally, if the teacher's not effective, he can be removed and dismissed. And we do that every year. Not with many teachers, but with some every
year.
But
you do remove some and dismiss them every year.
Yes, we do.
And that sort of disposes of the cliche, they have tenure and you can't fire them.
Tenure is not an immutable thing. It can be changed, but only by due process.
That's what you're really pleading for this morning, isn't it?
Due process on all fronts.
All fronts.
By that I mean orderliness.
Dr. Donovan, we have about just a few seconds left, and if there's anything you want to say, you've been very kind about answering the things I brought up.
No, I would say one thing only. I guess I've said it 15 times, but I'll keep saying it as long as I'm superintendent of schools. Everything we do in this city in education must be predicated on the child. Unless we're directing everything to the child's instruction and forgetting about our power plays and our adult desires and all of the format that we're going through, we're not going to achieve better education. We have big problems in our system. We have a good system with a lot of problems. And the only way we can do it is to focus on the child, and that's where I try to focus my attention, and I trust everybody else will.
I thank you ever so much for coming here this morning. I really appreciate it. Really do. Our guest this morning has been Dr. Bernard E. Donovan, who is the superintendent of New York City Schools. Before we go, I have a couple of reminders. One is for Shimmer, which is a low-calorie gelatin dessert. Very low-calorie, 48 calories per box instead of 332 as you get in regular gelatin dessert. But what I like, that's what they say about it. What I like to say about it is that it has more flavor. It's made by Louis Sherry, and as you might expect from anything made by Louis Sherry, it really has delicious flavor. More cherry, more raspberry, more strawberry, more orange, more lemon, more lime. Do ask for Shimmer. If you want to be slimmer, ask for Shimmer. And if you want good flavor in gelatin dessert, ask for Shimmer. Then we have Balbo Oil. This is the one to which they've added some olive oil, and they call it Balbo, the light oil with a kiss of the olive. Anyway, it's good for all of your deep frying recipes, and it's good for making any kind of dressing, French, Italian, Roquefort, whatever. And it's good in the barbecue sauces and marinades. It's just good oil, and it comes in a drip-proof can, which is nice, too. You don't have to do a lot of mopping up after you've used Balbo. Balbo, now in a can with a new convenient pouring spout, and you get it at a great many places, including Date Shopwell and Acme Supermarkets. B-A-L-B-O, Balbo Salad Oil. Now we go to the Flemington Fur Company at Flemington, New Jersey, where they're having their 48th anniversary sale, and they have beautiful fur coats at less than you expected to pay for a fur coat when you decide to buy one in the first place. And they have a town and country shop with marvelous cloth suits and cloth coats. Some of the coats are fur-trimmed. Anyway, it's a beautiful collection of fall clothes, really. You could do a whole wardrobe over there, a nice suit and a fur jacket and maybe a fur hat. Or a cloth coat if you prefer. Flemington Fur Company at Flemington, New Jersey. And as I've been telling you for about 16 years now, it's a wonderful place to shop. It's nice and low-key, and they're nice to you, and you enjoy it. And their prices are lower, and they're open on Sunday and every day to 6 o'clock, Wednesday and Friday evenings to 10. The Flemington Fur Company at Flemington, New Jersey. Now we just have one more thing, and this is about McCormick spaghetti sauce mix. And you add McCormick spaghetti sauce mix to tomato paste and water, and then add butter, and you simmer 20 minutes, and you've made the sauce that makes the spaghetti. It's that easy. The McCormick people are famous spice people, and they know how to make this kind of thing very well. McCormick spaghetti sauce and mix adds the taste that makes the sauce. Now, this is the Martha Dean Program, WR New York, and our guest this morning has been Dr. Bernard E. Donovan, who's the superintendent of New York City Schools. And now stay tuned for the news with Harry Hennessy, followed by the McCann's Good Program. And until tomorrow morning at 10:15, goodbye, everybody.